America's raid on Venezuela has paid off, or so it seems. Trump is now signaling that he can force Caracas back into line, open the door to new energy deals on US terms, and curb the influence of rival powers in the hemisphere. And while the optics suggest closure, reality points to the start of a far more difficult and dangerous phase. For two decades, Venezuela has been the single largest driver of regional instability, fueling mass migration, cross-border crime, and economic distress across the continent. And so, from Washington's perspective, stabilizing Venezuela is not just about oil or geopolitics. It is about tackling the sources of those problems before they reach the US border. But history warns against easy victories. When the United States toppled Saddam in 2003, the mission quickly collapsed into insurgency, fractured authority, and years of costly involvement. Venezuela now sits at a similar inflection point. Removing Maduro may clear the path for a genuine political transition, but it could just as easily pull America into open-ended commitments. Sometimes, even superpowers trip over their own shadow. Maduro is unlikely to see daylight anytime soon, but his removal does not mean the ruin of Venezuela's government or the end of Chavismo as an ideology. Power in Caracas has never rested in a single institution. It functions as a coalition stitched together by patronage, access to oil revenues, and control over hard power. With the arbitrator of that system gone, the coalition is now at risk of splintering. The decisive variable is the military. Some commanders will move quickly to bargain with whatever authority emerges. Others will hold out, betting that uncertainty works in their favor. Civilian power brokers, such as governors, party officials, and business tycoons, will move the same way, hedging rather than committing. Trump, however, has other plans. He prefers Vice President Delcy Rodriguez as interim leader, on the condition that she delivers on US demands. If she fails, the White House has threatened to use its naval task force in the Caribbean to cut off oil exports, Venezuela's economic lifeline. But it's not that black and white. Rodriguez sits in a trap of her own. If she complies fully with Trump's demands, she risks being toppled as a traitor by hardliners within the ruling party. At the same time, if she goes against Trump, she could face a fate worse than that of Maduro. Some of Trump's demands are transactional. Giving America a bigger role in Venezuela's oil sector is something Rodriguez can realistically deliver. As vice president, she helped negotiate many of the existing contracts. But the other demands, such as downgrading ties with Russia and China, expelling Colombian Marxist guerrillas, and dismantling the illicit flows that go through the country, are more complicated. Meeting those conditions would directly threaten the military factions that profit from them and set Rodriguez against some very powerful associates. Long-serving Defense Minister Vladimir Padrino and Interior Minister Diosdado Cabello control most of Venezuela's hard power. Padrino runs the armed forces, while Cabello commands the colectivos, which is a collection of paramilitary forces used to intimidate rivals and snuff out dissent. Both figures remain under US sanctions, and neither has shown any indication of surrendering power. In the foreseeable future, Venezuela will likely see an intensified, violent struggle among these power brokers rather than consolidation. Meanwhile, Venezuela's democratic opposition is under pressure to act and may take matters into its own hands. Many Venezuelans are disheartened that Maduro's ousting has led to a government that looks identical to the previous one they despised, minus the leader. These distraught citizens could take to the streets and try to topple Chavismo altogether. Opposition leader Maria Corina Machado has urged that her ally, Edmundo González, be recognized as the legitimate successor to the disputed 2024 election. Washington and several foreign governments had endorsed that position at the time. However, Machado has so far stopped short of calling mass mobilization inside the country, telling them only to be ready for what comes next. She has vowed to return to Venezuela, which could galvanize mass protests against the government. Keeping a lid on all these moving elements is not easy. A peaceful transition is still possible, but only if the process offers calibrated pressure, political amnesty, and a roadmap towards reintegration rather than blanket punishment. Without such measures, spoilers will emerge. Not only ideological hardliners, but rational actors acting in self-preservation. Maduro's exit does not dismantle the ecosystem he left behind. Crowds are restless. Political officials are scrambling for leverage. Militias and criminal networks are watching for openings, and insurgent groups on the margins are set to take advantage of any chaos that emerges in the coming days and weeks. The balance sheet, rather than the battlefield, could prove to be the key. Venezuela has lost more than 3/4 of its GDP over the past decade. Oil production has collapsed, public services barely function, inflation is sky high, and malnutrition is widespread. No other disaster in South America compares in scale. Seen in this way, control over oil revenues is not just a technical issue. It is the central determinant of whether any future government can govern at all. If those energy revenues are captured, frozen, or used as leverage by the United States, national sovereignty becomes hollow, regardless of democratic elections. So, Venezuela's future hinges on who controls its hydrocarbon wealth and how it's put to work. Today, the country produces roughly 1 million barrels per day, far lower than the 3.5 million it pumped in the late 1990s. Official reserves are often cited at more than 300 billion barrels. But there's a problem. It may be entirely made up. For context, Venezuela does hold massive oil reserves, but the 300 billion estimate comes from JP Morgan, which cites an OPEC report. The caveat is that OPEC relies solely on the numbers provided by its members, not independent audits. Venezuela's state-owned oil and gas company, the PDVSA, tripled its reserve estimate in the late 2000s without the appropriate exploration. At the time, Hugo Chavez needed a win to bolster his international leverage, and thus coerced the PDVSA into inflating the numbers. Hence, the 300 billion may be entirely made up. Even if the upper estimate proves accurate, the commercial reality is harsh. Much of Venezuela's output is heavy crude. It's high in sulfur and metallic impurities. US refiners can still convert it into jet fuel, but doing so is costly, which crushes margins and drives a steep discount relative to Texas light sweet crude. A realistic conversation about Venezuela's hydrocarbon resources is essential. If the country has a true cushion of 300 billion barrels, reconstruction has room for mistakes. But if the workable number is closer to 100 billion and concentrated in technically complex fields, the margin for error slims down. In that stage, corruption, patronage, and mismanagement would not just slow Venezuela's recovery, they could kill it. Three outcomes now sit in front of Venezuela. The first is a managed transition. Elections could be held, but whether a single opposition figure emerges as a viable leader remains uncertain. Machado has political drive, but that means little, considering the environment in which she operates. Venezuela's political system is fractured. Its institutions are weak, and powerful security actors hold veto power. Years of exile and repression have thinned the opposition's depth. Power could instead settle around an interim or technocratic council that is acceptable to the armed forces and parts of the former government. This option offers the best chance of stabilization, but only if paired with economic relief and credible guarantees for those relinquishing power. This would, of course, be the preferred outcome for Venezuelans but the final say seldom belongs to the public. The second outcome is the continuity of the current system, only without Maduro. The government's coercive and illicit machinery survives the leadership change. Armed groups continue to operate, political change becomes cosmetic, and all the while, socio-economic instability persists. Authority could be formally handed to a civilian caretaker, such as Rodriguez, who would then provide bureaucratic continuity abroad while preserving the power structures at home. For what it's worth, this is the most likely outcome in the immediate future. The third outcome is escalation. Elite power struggles turn violent, armed actors multiply, and violence spreads from the barracks to the streets. Military officers, colectivos, and criminal networks carve out new territories and revenue streams, while security services cease to obey the chain of command. The United States, having claimed ownership of the Maduro raid, is pulled back in, this time not by choice, but by momentum. What begins as crisis management turns into force protection, convoy security, and political mediation. The mission blurs into an open-ended commitment with rising costs, shrinking leverage, and no clean exit. Which of these three outcomes comes true will depend less on Maduro's removal than on the US strategy that follows. Venezuela is now a testing ground for American power and judgment. There will be a strong temptation to declare victory and walk away, but that would be reckless. Trying to engineer every outcome would be worse. Before we end, there's one more thing worth paying attention to, and it has to do with today's sponsor, Vanguard Mining. Traded under the ticker UUUFF on Schwab, Fidelity, Interactive Brokers, and E-Trade. The raid on Venezuela shows what happens when strategic resources fall under sanctions or foreign leverage, and oil is just the start. Today, the real pressure points are critical minerals, items that most people never really think about, but they form the building blocks of energy systems, defense industries, and industrial power. And in several of them, China holds decisive leverage over the West. Vanguard Mining has repositioned itself around this shift. Its portfolio is built around five strategic metals: gold, copper, lithium, uranium, and molybdenum. Just as important, its projects are located in jurisdictions aligned with Western supply chains, including Canada, Argentina, and Paraguay. Vanguard holds a gold, copper, and molybdenum project in British Columbia. The latter is a quiet but essential metal that is now subject to Chinese export restrictions. Vanguard also controls more than 90,000 hectares in Paraguay's Paraná Basin, right next to a major uranium project. The company has also regained full ownership of the Pocitos 1 lithium project in Argentina, just as lithium prices rebound. This race for mineral resources is all about resilience. Companies positioned across multiple metals and friendly jurisdictions are central to how the next phase of global competition plays out, and Vanguard is in prime position to be part of that. Check out their ticker on the screen and learn more by clicking the link in the description. Just make sure to do your own due diligence. I've been your host Shirvan from Caspian Report. If you approve of what we do, please leave a comment, hit the like button, and mayhaps share the video. In any case, thank you for your time, and sağ olun.